We're what are we? 7 weeks out from the election, and it's all on. Everybody's talking about the election. Everybody's talking about the latest polls. Everybody's talking about who's going to be in, who's going to be out. You know, do we ever take any notice of political polls? I don't know. But I do want to say, I want to welcome my next guest, or my first guest this evening, actually, Malcolm Mulholland, because you would have seen in the last couple of days what National have put out in terms of looking to fund cancer treatments that Pharmac in the past have never funded. But I liked what Malcolm Mulholland said, and he said that's short-term thinking, and it's probably at the expense of other initiatives that we need to be addressing. Maybe I didn't quite get that right about other initiatives, but it looks to me as if we're taking from Peter to pay Paul. Welcome this evening to Radio Waitea, Malcolm. Nice to have you on.
Kia ora, Mere Peka.
Well, I have seen you in action over the last few days, and I have to agree with you. So this was a proposal. I don't know if it was actually their policy, but they did say that they would like to, if they become the government, the national government or the National Party, that's what they'd like to look at, is funding better treatment for some cancer. For some cancer services or treatment that currently Pharmac are not funding. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you did. So they've identified the 13 cancer drugs that Te Ahu o Te Kahu, the Cancer Care Agency, had identified really need to be funded as a minimum standard of care for New Zealand cancer patients. And the way that they came up with that was that they looked at the ESMO scale, so that's a scale that's used in Europe. It's only ever been used on one other country to identify shortfalls in cancer care, and that's Kazakhstan. And also many of the drugs identified on that list are a part of the World Health Organization's essential medicines list. Now, that's a list that has been developed for developing countries or third world countries. I think it really illustrates just how far behind we are when it comes to cancer medicines in Aotearoa.
My God, are you saying that what they're proposing with those 13 cancer drugs, that we should be way ahead of those cancer drugs because they're available to developing countries and surely, yeah. My God.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty scary when you get your head around that to just think how far behind we are. I mean, and you know, these drugs have been sitting on Pharmac options for investment list for a number of years now. Most bowel cancer patients or whānau that have been affected with bowel cancer will be familiar with the drug cetuximab or Erbitux. So that's one of those particular drugs. But really, the reason why the WHO comes up with an essential medicines list is as a guide for developing or third world countries, and we've still got a long way to go until we fund all of those drugs.
Well, if they're developing, if the list is for third world countries, wouldn't there be a list for, I'd like to think that do we classify ourselves as a first world country? Because a third world country might not have the wherewithal, the dollars, they might not have everything else that goes with being able to support these 13 cancer drugs. I would have thought, for goodness sake, we should have been looking at something that Australia has. And I don't think that they would be looking at a list that is recommending drugs for third world countries.
No, you're absolutely right. And if you want to quantify the gap between ourselves and Australia, Australia now funds over 100 more treatments for cancer than what we currently fund here at home. That just shows you how big that gap is, and it's widening at a fairly fast rate of knots because we just haven't kept up. We're now in a case of playing catch up, and that's why National made the announcement that they did. Let's fund these 13 cancers so at least we've got the bare minimum. But, you know, we've got to remember too that there are still other cancer drugs that need to be funded on Pharmac's options for investment list or waiting list of medicines they would like to fund if they had the budget. And we've got to remember too, we're the only country in the world that has a waiting list for medicines. No other country operates how we do. And as a result, our health outcomes are, in particular for stage 4 cancer patients, a lot worse than other comparable countries.
Well, you know, it sounds it's really quite sad when, you know, if we've got a waiting list for medicines, and you know, I guess from time to time there is a waiting list, but if we've got a significant waiting list for medicines for you know, people in New Zealand, patients in New Zealand, for whatever, that does seem to me that there is something wrong. I don't know if it's because we've got a small population, Malcolm, and that we don't have the well, I'm not saying the disposal income, but we don't have the income to put into drugs that we might want to put in because we just don't have the money. But to me, it seems as if maybe we should be looking at where the need is greatest, because we know that cancer is, well, it's increasing. And it's certainly increasing for a sector of the population that we know who is affected. I mean, it's not just consigned to one sector of our population, but we certainly know that, and I'm talking about Māori and Pacifica, they're there in big numbers where cancer is concerned. But it does seem to me that we're either falling behind or we're just not putting the money into it that we should be. I know we've got to find it from somewhere. We've got to take the money from somewhere. But it seems to me that if we're not funding now, it's not going to get any easier or any better over in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, without doubt, we're falling behind Medipeka. But there's no reason why we can't be adequately funding PharmAct to levels that on a per capita basis would be the same as Australia. You know, if we look at our GDP, I mean, we're still doing not too bad. I know everybody's feeling the pinch right now. And certainly there are areas, I think, of government spending that we could look at and go, well, we really want to prioritise the funding of medicines. But, you know, that's a conversation and a debate that we need to have, and we're hoping to have that in the lead up to this election for people to actually prioritise medicine spend. If I was to contextualise it, I would say if we doubled PharmAct's budget, and then probably with a couple of hundred million more, so around about the $3 billion budget, at the moment it's about 1.3, I think, from memory, then we would be on a level playing field with that of Australia, and we would be able to fund the drugs that we want to fund. Now, that's not to say that we want to fund every drug in the world. Often I hear criticism coming back that that's something that we would like to see. No, this is just about wanting to be average with the rest of the developed world. And you know what? It's actually up to the government of the day. If they want to see it happen, they'll make it happen.
Yeah, that's right. Did you say that we should be looking at perhaps somewhere around about the $3 billion?
Correct. So at the moment, we're about 1.3 in terms of PharmAct's overall spend on medicines. It needs to be bumped up to that level of funding. And I think the other thing too that people aren't aware of, Medipeka, is that PharmAct face a $181 million funding hole next year. So one of the things that the Labor government did was they funded them, they increased their funding, but they neglected to say that beyond the next financial year, that funding will no longer be there. Treasury warned them. They advised them don't go ahead with it without doing out years, so ensuring that that funding is there forever and a day. And that will mean that whoever the government is, whether it be Labor or National, will have to find another $181 million to keep PharmAct at the level of $1.3 billion. Otherwise, PharmAct will be in a position where they'll have to cut medicines. So, you know, we're really saying to our politicians, this is not a good situation to be in. This is evidence of a broken system. A large part of it is about how you fund PharmAct and at what level you are funding PharmAct to.
Well, that, and of course, that would be $181 million annually, wouldn't it? Otherwise, that's an annual shortfall then.
It is. It's ongoing. And then if they were to trump up with $181 million, all that does is retain that level of funding from PharmAct. That's not new funding that PharmAct desperately needs. So, you know, if National are true to their word, they'll introduce, I think from memory, it was $200 or $250 million over 4 years, $70 million thereabouts, by those 13 drugs each year, but they're going to have to come up with another $181 million annually in order to meet that shortfall.
Yes, otherwise they might be chopping something else. And I also understand that what they were looking at being able to fund these 13 cancer drugs is if they start to take out the universality, I think that's what you call it, of the funding for prescriptions. Is that right?
That's correct. So what National have said is that for people in need, so superannuitants and also low-income earners, they will maintain that the prescription cost of $5 is kept free. But for those who can afford, will be asked to pay, but it's still capped at $100 annually. You know, what gets me, I think, about the whole dollars and cents when it comes to Farm Act is that there have been multiple studies done where if we fund a particular medicine, that's actually a cost savings to the health system. And one really good example of that was the funding of Trikafta for those with cystic fibrosis. So Cystic Fibrosis New Zealand did a study, they commissioned Deloitte, and they said, what's the cost to keep cystic fibrosis patients sick in Aotearoa? The figure was around about $116 million. And then they said, what would be the maximum cost we would expect to pay for Trikafta that would keep our patients well? And that cost was $50 million maximum. So automatically, you've got over a $60 million saving in the health system. So roughly, for every dollar spent on medicines, you will save two to three elsewhere in the health system. And that should be how we should view the funding of medicines.
Yeah, well, I think that's very good. That's a very good example, because in all of the cancers and other illnesses and diseases, I think if you did that cost-saving exercise, you would find if we could just, rather than think of it as a cost, think of it as we're going to invest, and we'll try to do early investment, get the treatment as soon as possible in terms of the medication and the drugs, etc. And so further down the track, when the improvement in the health is there, it would shorten, or no, not necessarily, but it would reduce the cost over a period of time for the healthcare, the long-term healthcare.
Absolutely. And, you know, you can see that with the funding, even with these 13 cancer drugs. A lot of these drugs are immunotherapies, some of which can be taken orally. So that means that there's less strain on the hospital system. That means that they're no longer having to be given chemotherapy, which, you know, takes up space and the time of clinicians. And also they have less side effects, which, you know, they have to be prescribed medicines in order to counter those. So there are numerous savings just within the health system alone, let alone the patient and their productivity and their contribution to their community and their whānau and their home life, that can be made by seriously investing in medicines.
Well, the other day I was over, I had to go quickly for a quick trip to Switzerland, and I was talking to somebody about chemotherapy, and they were quite amazed that we still have the degree of chemotherapy in terms of a you know, an accepted method of treating cancer. And they said that they do have it, I suppose, and stuff, but that's just about a thing of the past for them. Well, you know, the chemo that we have, which is the big side effects and everything. And I said, well, what do you have? And they have things that you can ingest, you know, drugs and things like that. And they can still go to work, for God's sake.
Doesn't
have the side effects. Doesn't have the side effects. And I said, well, I think we've got that. But they looked at me if missed you to say, well, if you haven't, there's something bloody wrong.
Yeah, well, the truth is we haven't. We don't fund a high number of modern medicines. And often we'll take 10 to 15 years to fund, a drug that's come onto the market. Why? Because PharmX model, because they're so underfunded, they wait for the generic to come on. So they have to wait for the intellectual property to pass. That's done by the innovator company, by the pharma company. And that's the PharmX model. So if we're going to accept the PharmX model moving forward, we are forever and a day going to be at least one, if not two generations behind in the funding of modern medicines. You know, overseas jurisdictions aren't just talking about immunotherapies anymore. They're talking about genetic modification. They're talking about CAR T cell therapy, for example. And the sad thing is because of the reputation that PharmX has and New Zealand has with its approaches to medicine, that means companies are no longer prepared to bring their products here because it costs time, it costs money, and they just don't see the point in putting in money for something that may never, ever be funded. So from a business perspective, it doesn't actually make sense for them.
Well, you know, just with what you've just said then, you know, Malcolm, that just means that if we don't get access and early access to modern drugs that have little, that have probably reduced side effects, et cetera, and that allow us to go about our business as normal as possible, it means that New Zealanders are going to die unnecessarily earlier than people with the same medical condition overseas.
Absolutely. But the sad fact about that, Medipeka, is that we still, despite even the previous John Key government and then the Labor government now, having asked the Ministry of Health to collate data on stage four patients so that we can actually measure what the life expectancy is compared to, you know, the likes of Australia and the UK. We still don't collate that data. The only reason we know that patients die, you know, a lot quicker than their counterparts overseas once they've been diagnosed with stage four cancer is actually due to the likes of the Breast Cancer Foundation, which is a charity which has its own register of stage four women in particular with breast cancer. You know, we still do not collate that data despite successive governments asking for that. And I think that's another travesty as part of our cancer care, you know, oversight in New Zealand.
So, Malcolm, would that data come from MOH?
It should. It should. And other countries do that. There's no reason why that can't happen, because an oncologist will know once a patient is at stage four. So to me, it's quite simple. Once you know that, you input the data, and then, you know, sadly, once the patient passes, you will know how long on average with what treatment options you give that patient actually survives for. And then you can compare that to, say, the likes of Australia or wherever the case may be. But we still don't do that here in Aotearoa.
Well, you know, just listening to you, it doesn't sound that damn difficult. I mean, if you can get the data and then you just compare it, yes, and you track it through to when somebody does pass away, and then you track it through and then you look at the comparable overseas and how they live obviously some years longer, well, then, yep. You know, if the data's there and it's painting a picture, then why aren't we? Well, is it that the government doesn't have the commitment, or are they saying it's a cost that we don't have the dollars for, or is the will not there?
Oh, I think it's a combination of everything. I think, you know, there is a real desire for us not to take a serious look at it, because I think if we did, I think it would show a very, very shocking picture, one that would paint government in a very bad light. But we need that data to make some honest assessments. Without it, we're just flying blind. And one of the things that really irritates me when we talk about health outcomes, especially in Whānaka, are quizzed about how well we do as a country, they'll often point to our life expectancy doing reasonably well compared to, again, Australia and the UK. That's not the question we need to be asking. The question we need to be asking is, how well are our patients doing once they're diagnosed with stage four? How long are they living for? What treatment options are available, and what impact is that having, one, on their quality of life, but two, on their length of life? But again, we don't ask those hard questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, and you and I know, Malcolm, that data is key. And if we're not prepared to collect it and then do the good hard analysis and say, well, what is this actually saying to us? Then we're flying blind, or we're just going to be content to put up with the situation that we've currently got, which is basically a continuation of the underfunding and keeping fingers crossed that it'll all come right in the wash.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no reason why we need to accept that now in 2023. There are some amazing advancements being made in cancer care, and some of which are now being treated as chronic conditions rather than something that is terminal. That is how far advanced some of the cancer treatments are. But, you know, we're going to be the last cab off the rank if we continue on with this mindset that we have the envy of the world in Whānaka. I mean, that's just an absolute joke amongst the oncology community internationally.
Yeah, well, it is pity, because we tend to think in New Zealand that we have got, I'm not saying a Rolls-Royce health system, but we've got a health system that compares favourably with the rest of the world. But cancer is on the rise all around the world, and we should be able to have drugs that can make a difference to the quality of life of the cancer patients, and also hopefully lengthen their life as well. So it just seems to me that we're not making any headway in this area. And I think when we saw the announcement this week by National about the 13 cancer drugs, and I did listen to what you were saying, and you were just saying that it's long-term, the benefits are just not going to be there.
Yeah, we need to look at how we fund medicines in New Zealand. We need to actually address the problem. And the problem is in part how PharmAg operate and what their culture is. There's still no set timeframes by which they need to assess medicines and by which they'll be funded. And also we still don't have clarity and transparency around how decisions are actually made. I think most New Zealanders would be shocked to know that it's not actually the clinicians within PharmAg that make the ultimate decision. It's actually the health economists, and then it goes to a wider staff briefing, and then it's the board that sign off on it. That's how decisions are made. So we need to clear that up, but equally, we also need to look at the budget because it's just not fit for purpose anymore.
Yeah, that's quite frightening, really, when you say if their own clinicians are not around the table, or not at the table making the final calls, you've got people who are board members. Some of them may have some inkling of health, but they may not be. They might be put there for a whole heap of other reasons, possibly because they might be bean counters or, you know, goodness knows. But, yeah, well, it is really sad because we've got a lovely country and we want everybody to be able to be thriving. And if we can get good drugs, medicines and medication and et cetera, then that would surely be what we want.
Oh, without a doubt, you know, that's a country and a future that I want to be a part of. And, you know, you alluded to earlier, Meripeka, the fact that cancer is on the rise, and certainly the statistics indicate that even here at home, you know, one in every third person will have an encounter with cancer. Well, by the end of this decade, it'll be one in every two. Half the population will at some point in their lives have an encounter with cancer. So it's a tsunami wave, about to hit us, and we need to be prepared as best we can, but we're not doing that.
And Malcolm, with your knowledge in this whole area and obviously about diseases and drugs, et cetera, so if we work hard to eradicate or eliminate poverty, that should also help as well in the long term.
Oh, without a doubt, because if you can lift people out of poverty, that means they have more choices. Hopefully they make better and their health, or not better, I shouldn't say that, but healthier choices, especially around food selection and drink and so forth. And also, you know, have the ability to lead a more healthier lifestyle in general. So absolutely, lifting people out of poverty is key in order to increase, the health outcomes of the population.